in the list of all the people. But
I can't see anything.
These are all the people who are informants. But I think you're there as well, you see. So you
it's
have
a mixture of informants and the collectors.
And the collectors as well.
And Mark Braid is down here,
Is down there. But Tom Braid was on it too.
Yeah.
Yes, Tom
as
would
a collector. So we you really want to have his name down.
It's
too.
There.
Is
at
it
the
there at the bottom?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, do you want to start at the top?
Yeah. Well, whoever you knew, really.
Yeah. Well, I knew William Cobbin,
all right.
Oh, yes. They are not. We just have a natter.
Yeah.
And I didn't know all he was doing, but I knew a good deal of about him.
Well, Kirsty can tell you which one she particularly wants, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you would have plenty of information about him.
We've got
that one, I thought. Now, Harry Boyd, you got pretty well have you?
Yes, we have got a bit.
But Harry had some phrases and some
it's all right.
Some pronunciations that were definitely unusual and probably going back a long way. So Harry was very valuable in that way that he would he had some idioms of usages of his own to perfectly correct, but a bit unusual.
He was from the north, wasn't he?
Yes.
That was Harry Boyd.
And then Harry Boyd went blind and he went up to the up to the Tynemoch, what do you call it, what is the name of it now up in Braddon there? It was the poorest.
Yes, it's for Ballymona.
Yeah, opposite side of Ballymona.
Right.
Harry was up there for a long time, and he'd be going away, Goodall, and then he'd be suddenly saying in Manx, I know my son Fagerbeck, I can't see anything. And that was bothering him badly.
Yeah.
So,
Was he still living at home when the folklore
he was
commission?
A Balaf man.
He was still at Balaf.
A single man.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked on the farms and all over the place. Mainly, lots of jobs, but the main job was hedging of one sort or of mainly with the sod hedges. Mm-hmm. That's what Harry did most of his days there. And as we said, he was going around with a spade in my hand. And he was always a great man with the spade. And must have been in his day a very fluent Manx speaker. But he got, like all the rest of them, he got a bit rusty.
He's got lovely pronunciation, he really has.
But Harry's got some wonderful. That one thing you see there particularly, one that's totally unique, Harry's Mainish for Mairish.
Yeah.
And that would boil down to Ma Ain Lesh, as one with, or Ma Ain Rish, could be either of those. Either one with or one to. And they both can mean with. Rish can mean with too. So, but that's for me, that Mainish instead of Mairish would be. Well, it was totally unique and nobody else had it. Some had heard it or thought they'd heard it. They couldn't be sure. But he was, as I said, a single man. And he only went to sea once and he said he was that sick. He never went again. He went out in the boat fishing or something and he was that sick he never went out again. That's the only time he left the island, according to Harry himself, was to go out in the boat. Well, he was still more or less, he was in Manx waters, got out of Manx waters. So Harry never left the sod pretty well, except on that occasion when he wished he hadn't.
Yeah. And so did he, do you know anything about his family? Did he have
Yes, I know, I don't know, I didn't know the family themselves at all, but he was quite well known, and he still has. Is one of the girls here, working here, is a descendant of Harry's family. Not Harry himself, not of himself, course.
Yes, he had but sisters and brothers.
Harry yeah. family. And I must find out more about him. I haven't done, he's off on holiday at the moment. And of course, I had to pick that time to think about asking. So I didn't get... But Harry was a very local man, and mostly with the farming. And he just used the language. He didn't ever delve into it in any way, whatever. So he didn't alter anything unless by accident, by slip of the tongue or something, or by lack of memory. That would be the only way that Harry's Manx would alter, because he didn't go off the sod, and he didn't consult others very much. He used it with them, but he wouldn't exchange it, because when we came to ask him, he said he'd never thought about it. He was just using it, of course, for the meanings of things and so on. Annie Neal?
Yes. Who's that? She was from Ballagarrett.
Oh, of course. The mistress.
I've heard her, Walter was talking about.
What's his name? Yes, and wherever he is here.
Her husband. Charles? Yeah,
yes, he was deaf and nearly blind when I knew him. But she was extremely good. And she had, you've got a lot that I've written about her, and of course, and Pye Killip will have done too, and you will have written about her too.
Why was she called the mistress? Why did people?
I don't. It's not just the name. The mistress they called her.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know why.
And so they had a small...
She was not bossy, but no? she would rule the roost, but she wasn't bossy in doing it. But she was an extremely nice person altogether, and it would be very difficult to get up against her, because she would calm you down, you know, if you did. Not that I ever did, but that's what I would imagine, anyway. So,
did she and her husband both talk Manx?
Oh, yes. Yeah. But latterly, he left it to her. I remember in the first times that I went to see them, he was taking charge, but he couldn't hear, and he couldn't hardly see, very, very, very poorly, and he would turn over to her. And it's the same thing happened with the convicts.
Mm.
See, all Dan Convig himself went deaf too, and he sort of passed over there. At first, it was him that was doing all the laying down of the law, and this Mrs. Neal, an extremely good memory. They all did have good memory, but she had extremely good memory, particularly for her age, when she was getting on a lot. And the two boys were understanding a lot, but they couldn't speak any.
Did you ever talk to them about Annie Neal and her husband about what they thought about the language, and were they passing it on to their children, or was that not part of the conversations?
No, none of the old people really passed it on properly. They seemed to have the attitude that it wasn't essential or something. But not that they were against it, but they were so keen that to make a living, they'd have to learn English. That's what they all thought, you see. It was impossible to earn a living without speaking English, which is not entirely accurate. But yes, they didn't pass it on like they should have done. But I don't think there's any... any of them really deliberately didn't pass it on. They just
their lives were very busy. And,
oh yes, yeah. It was hand to mouth, very, very much so, particularly on the land.
We've got Johnny Neen,
Balaf. Well, you've got all you need about him, I think, haven't you? Pretty well.
We have quite a lot of information about him.
Yeah. he had some most unusual pronunciations too, but they had sort of developed, I think, down the time, like other, and that thing for that nobody else had, for once in the, he had one word for in the other. it doesn't mean another, but.
And by that stage, they were each sticking to their own pronunciation, although they were quite happy with the other person's.
Yes.
There's no attempt to change their
no,
own
No, there
all.
Wasn't really, no. And what's more, what did seem to happen, they pretty well stuck to their own versions, and they didn't try, outside of Caesar and a few others, Cassius and a few others, not many tried to find out the other. There were some exceptions. My grandfather, this is not on this list, of course, my grandfather, my father's father, was an uncle of his in Derby, walked from Derby out to Bride, and he was going to stay there for a few days and go back again. He stayed there for 3 weeks, and he did the whole time he was there. He was retired, he wasn't working. The whole time he spent there was comparing the Derby Manx and the north side Manx, and if only we'd had some sort of recording, if only he could have recorded what he was thinking and what he'd found out then, we'd know an awful lot more about the language than we do now. And mind you, of course, we know a lot about it now through the study that has been made, and of course most of these people only had the language and that's it, and they used it, and they didn't do very much comparing to any great extent, with a few
exceptions.
They weren't
studying it. They were
a few exceptions,
yeah.
Of course. You would say, oh, is that the way you would say it, sir? That type of thing. But they didn't take an awful lot of notice, and they stuck to their own. They didn't mix them, if it comes to that, but very, very little. You wouldn't get the Cowan and Cowden mixed up together. They would be kept very separate. They're both equally correct, except the one is a, what you could call a development. Not a good development, maybe, but it's a development. And what it was supposed to be, they realised, I think, in themselves that the sound should be longer. And they stuck this little D sound in, or a B sound in, to lengthen it. That's the theory that Robert has, isn't it, I think?
I think so,
and
yes.
It's a very reasonable one, because you've got this sound, this is too short, so they stick something in, suitable, quite suitable. But funnily enough, the Cornish did the same thing, and Breton. The Cornish have this, like for the word, it doesn't take many seconds, the word pen for head. And Cornish and Breton, not all Breton, but half, say best part of half of the Breton will say pedden, and the Cornish will say pedden, and then Peel area and down south will say kjodden, with a little D in it. And butter is eam, and that does that sound too short to them? It is actually a very short word in most dialects, but to the evidently with Manx it had been longer, so they put this B in Eben, with a little B in front of an M. You get a D in front of an N and a B in front of an M. That's where you...
That's great. I don't speak Manx, but it's all...
It's just explaining why these things happen. Not just something that they'd thought, decided to do. It's something that had crept in. With usage.
You were talking about them using the language rather than studying it. Did you find that their vocabulary was very much defined by their lives,
mostly,
that they were doing?
They certainly wouldn't have been able to give you a stump speech on it, a planetary exploration or something, but outside of Brian Stoller, I don't know anybody. I liked his Brother Ed of Flanadach, a probing into between the planets. And if you're probing in isn't exploding, it's something very like it. It's physically probing in instead of mentally.
What about, you talked a bit about the Kinvigs before. What about Sage Kinvig? We've got a little bit of information about her.
Well, you'll have a lot about her. But I tell you what she did say, that the thing that might be interesting to note, whether it's actually officially recorded, I have put it in the notes, I think, but I'm not certain. She said they had a crock outside the door, and all our leaves and nettles, thistles, was put into this crock and was left to set there, and it was formed this, what do you call it? The growth on the
like
top.
Like a compost.
Like a mould.
The mould, that's what I'm trying to get. They poured this mould on the top, and they skimmed that off, and they put it on with a dock leaf or on a bandage, whatever they do, on any form of a cut that they got. And she said none of them ever got blood poisoning. Mm. Well, it was a do-it-yourself penicillin, I reckon.
Mm.
There must have been something of the same elements in that, that it, I would believe, that that there is to be in penicillin. The same, it seemed to have, it's, they never got blood poisoning. Mm. So I think it must have been something quite very elemental, but effective, because everybody else was getting blood poisoning, but none of their, the people used to wonder, and none of the convicts ever got, that was her mother's people, ever got, not convicts themselves, whoever she was, I forget.
Were they Kellys or?
What?
Was she a Kelly?
I don't know.
No.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
I think
they were up at Gary Holland for a long time.
But you'll have all that, yes. Yeah. But that's what the people used to wonder, why that none of that. And then, of course, it went into the convicts too, because she used it with her family, and they never got any blood poisoning. And she always kept that up, with to have this mould available. Just skim it off with a spoon or something and put it on and wrap it around. And the dock leaf was the favourite thing. They all liked to put the dock leaf instead of lint or something, I don't know what. They didn't have any lint, so they put this, with the stuff was put on the dock leaf wrapped over and tied with wool very often.
How did you, we'll go away from the list for a moment, but how did you know about all of these people?
Well,
how did you know that they were there speaking?
Well, I was with the museum for and I got, it was ground on these people when I was on the Book Life survey.
Mm-hmm. So you met them through doing the photo?
Oh, yes, survey. Most of the... I knew the most of them, of course, before. This fella I didn't know. I'm still trying to find out something about it.
Okay, we'll come back to that later on.
But yeah.
Ned Madrill, down at Craigneish.
Well, I think you're practically all you would need on Ned, perhaps. Some things that might not be recorded, I wonder.
I think Ned might have been that just that little bit younger than some of the others.
Oh, yes.
He seems quite confident, Ned
was one that really...
the language
wanted, one of the type that wanted to spread it.
Mm-hmm.
He would really... Caesar wanted to spread it. Most of the others were very willing to help. I haven't come to them yet.
Mm.
Tommy Leach is the one that was like, he would be extremely willing to help always. Very good, but he didn't do very much even with his own people. He didn't try to put, but anybody that wanted to know.
Don't know as much about Tommy, really. I mean, apart from the fact that he's from Kerrokeel.
Yes. I knew him quite
well. We don't know much about his background at all.
But I haven't got any background at all to him. But I used to go up to see him often, of course.
And he was interested in the chapel there, wasn't he? He was interested in the chapel.
Oh, yes.
He had a
lot
to do with
very
the chapel
much so.
There.
Mm. Yes.
Was he married?
I honestly don't know.
I think he was.
I think so.
I read an interview with him.
I think so, but I don't really know.
Was he a miner at one point?
Oh, yes, he was, because he'd been in South Africa.
That's right.
Yes, I've heard him say that. He was in South Africa.
Because I'm sure he'd tried fishing as well, and then he'd gone into the Foxtel mines.
Yes.
And then he'd done his farming again as well. But yes. He doesn't mention going away to South Africa.
He did to me.
Did he? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Not in these recordings.
Oh, didn't he?
No. But he did mention he'd been in the mines.
He did say to me that he was... He didn't say where he was exactly, but in South Africa.
Mm.
Did he say any more about what it was like going to South Africa?
No. I never heard him say anything, just to say that he was there. Never any more than that. Mm. Maybe something he wanted to... didn't get on very well or something. But all I've heard him say, but not for long. So it might have been only for a week as far as I know, I don't know. Yeah. But he was there, apparently.
And then he came back to the island.
Yes, in a hurry. Yes.
Well, not surprising, maybe.
Yes. Okay. It didn't suit him. He didn't like it.
Well, he went back onto the land after that, didn't he? Yeah.
What about Eleanor Caron?
Now, Eleanor Caron, now, she was a very fluent mind speaker, but you had to drag it out of her a bit. And once she'd get going, she was fine, but then she'd lapse back into... She's very good, she was very, very good, but gone rusty. Mm. I mean, if you had a language, take it out, somebody asked me to talk about Spanish now, for I'd be sunk, because though I knew quite a lot, I've gone out of practice with it. I understand right enough, but I've gone out of practice.
To actually speak.
And of course, I can write almost anything you like, and I can read almost anything you like, but with a pretty unacceptable accent. So that sort of thing happened. But with them, of course, the accent didn't go with me. I'd had to learn the accent and learnt it wrong. So they'd learnt it, but they'd learnt it right.
That's different. Yeah.
In that case, like so with me, my Spanish, I'd learnt some of it right from a Spaniard, but the most of it was just what the best I could do, and it wasn't correct always. Sure enough, reading is a big help because you've got your stress to follow, you know, the roughly.
Were they ever shy about talking in Manx to you at the beginning when you first went out? Were any of these people embarrassed about talking?
Oh no, I never found any of them in any way embarrassed. Not in my time.
Did Eleanor speak Manx at home? Do you know?
Not latterly, no.
No.
Because she only had us to talk to latterly. She'd certainly have a, but she said she didn't see so much of Ned. She was very good with Ned. They were very good together. Ned tended to dominate, but she would put him in his place now and again. All right.
Captain Kinley, this is one that we
don't know. This is the one
know.
That I can do something about it. Very loosely. He was in, when I first went to the mice classes in Peel in 1931, Caesar Cashin and them were in charge of, Caesar was in charge of the class, but Captain Kinley was the one that sort of held sway because it was in the harbour master's office. So Captain Kinley was in the chair, so to speak, and he's very good at the mice. His father was excellent. But then, of course, Ned was, Captain Kinley, was, I never knew his Christian name, was away so much that... because he lost touch with
it. Was his father a native speaker?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. His father, because father came over to see Caesar Cashin, and we thought we'd never get them separated.
Where did he come from then?
From Port Erin.
Oh, Port Erin.
Yeah. So, I think it was Ballyfesson.
Mm-hmm.
But
did the father speak to Captain Kinley in the home? You know, or did Captain Kinley just decide later in life he wanted to learn Manx too?
I think it was more that later in life, yes. Mm. I think it was. He went through his father, because he was encouraged.
Yes.
But then she was away so much, it's not until he retired that he took up the Manx seriously. He did take it up, I believe, quite earlier on, but just in spasms. Mm. but then he got seriously, and he got very... Of course, the only thing we had was the Bible, with nothing else. A good one had come out, but they didn't do very much until Tom Dodd here. Tom Dodd went through it. He did really study the thing properly, backed up by his great friend Percy Kelly.
Right.
So that's where that came in. Now that's where Tom Dodd came in. Percy Kelly, which you may not have much about here. Percy was extremely good at and keen on the Manx.
I think we've got some letters in the museum library because he ran classes as well.
Oh, yes, he did. He ran them, particularly in Port St. Mary.
And there's some correspondence with students. And he ran them up in
the museum too. I was in the early days, I went to Percy Kelly's class in the museum. Mm. And he says to me, "You should be taking this class, not me." I said, "Oh, no." And
Was Tom Dodd, he was from Peel, was he?
Yes, he was a bank manager in Peel. What they used to refer to as Tom Dodd's little bank in Peel.
And did he actually live in Peel?
Yes, lived up in Peveril Terrace.
Oh, right.
Because Walter, my brother, and Noreen, my sister, and myself used to go up of a night to Tom Dodd, and we'd go through Goodwin. Through the grammar with him. It was here, that's where we got the foundation of our grammar, was through Tom Dodd. He was very good, but he didn't push himself a lot. But he did see that we needed the grammar, and Walter and Noreen, my brother and sister, were older than me, and they got better heads on their shoulders than I had. But I was just beginning to realise that it wasn't totally impossible for me to learn anything. I'd been given to understand that for 6 years, that it was a waste of time for me ever to try. That was I was given to understand. A waste of time for you to try to learn anything. You haven't got the brain to do it. And it's not very encouraging. So I was just coming out of that phase and suddenly realised that it was possible for me to learn something. Mm. Not very well or a great deal, but I could learn something. Tom Dodd there, Tommy Leese you've had, Tom Dodd, or John Gelwellick, you've got all you'd want about him, haven't you?
Well, there's a lot in Cunnington Mae Egid.
Yes, there's an awful lot about him.
Not much about his latter life in the Isle of Man itself, because he was a teacher, wasn't he?
Oh, yes, but he was, because he was doing a certain amount, same as we were, but he didn't go around quite so much on the older people, did he? But he did an awful lot of study of Manx,
He was behind doing Corrie Gilgach in the 50s, wasn't
That's
he?
That's right.
Yes.
He did a lot of practical work like that, and a lot of translating and copying out of one thing, hymns in particular. He was very keen on that, of course, particularly anything connected with Methodism. He was keen on that. Billy Ratcliffe was one of the musketeers, as we called them, four of us that went to Ireland in 1939, just before the war. There was Billy Ratcliffe, Mark Braid, Charlie Crenn, and myself. Who went. Tom was too young then. He didn't go. Billy Ratcliffe has done a tremendous amount of work in and out all over the place. And perhaps particularly a lot at home, and he did an awful lot with the mistress and so on. He did an awful lot of work there, keeping them all going around on the north in particular. But he'd come down the other side of us, and he'd often come down to Ballinair, to the farm, to Walter and myself, and we'd have a good natter too. But Billy was very, very good. Did a lot of work.
What did you go to Ireland for?
Well, we went just for a tour, and we wanted to meet some of the people, and we stayed in Dunquin with Kruger, as they called Thomas Morris Kavanagh. Morris Kavanagh was the house, and then we went out onto the Blaskets and so on. We spent a whole solid week in Dunquin with Kruger and Cott, his missus, and visitors coming in, lots of them from Dublin and so on, learning Irish and that, students of that sort, and I used to envy them because they had the opportunities, and they were at it day and night, make all the difference, and of course they'd have got so many people to see. Charlie Crane, as I said, was one of the musketeers, and Charlie had a tremendous amount of work for the Manx in general, more in the form of usage. He did quite a bit of writing and so on, but more in the form of usage and keeping us all on our toes to not to get too slack. So.
And yourself, you're on the list.
Well, myself, I wouldn't know what I was doing was sort of mixing amongst all the others, and I was particularly interested in the Lycosis Acacia. That's the one that I went to. He's not here. William Quinn won't be on this. The Cis Acacia, they're not on. These are they're there before this time. Cis Acacia died in 43, and that's just not on that list. Yeah. So
how did you first become? Why did you become interested in learning Manx?
That's simple. My mother's stepmother started me off while I was still on my hands and knees before I started to walk. This is according to my mother, of course, as I did. But from what I can gather, it was well before I could walk, she started on this, because my mother took double pneumonia and just scraped through it. And I was farmed out on my step-grandmother. And that's where I started on the Manx, from the word go. And I was asked, after I'd been to the classes, this was come in me, I was asked when I come to the classes, after mother, how is it that I've heard these things before? Where have I heard them? And she said, that's very simple. As grandma, she say, that's where you got them from. Because I'd heard all the, crowd the gold, gold the skull, and all these other little ditty things. Yeah. And the Lord's Prayer was, I'd be one side of the bed and she was the other, and one line, and I would follow with one line, then it got to be two lines, and it got to be the lot. And I didn't know how it was, but I knew it off by heart. And I hadn't used it, but all those years I hadn't used it, but it was still there. Yeah. Because as soon as I saw it written, well, it looked funny, couldn't make it out, and then when I heard it read out by Cesar, I knew immediately then what it was. After the first few words, I knew what it was. But before I'd had anything to do with it. And I wondered why it was that I knew it all before, without having all the others, you all had to learn it like anybody else. But I already knew it, and that was why. And I wondered why on earth I knew this Crowd of Gold, just a children's rhyme thing, and the Rauschewerke Verga. I knew all those things. And I didn't know how, but that's because I'd had it before I could talk.
So how did you come to meet up with Cesar Cashin?
Well, through the class.
So you went to his
class? The Manx class, yes. Captain Kinley, there we are, Captain Kinley, Cesar Cashin, Tom Dodd, they were all in this class. Where are we? Captain Kinley, Tom Dodd, June Gell used to come up.
Right.
Charlie Crane used to come down.
Yep.
Madge Watterson came over. Mark Braid used to come over. Lily Duggan used to come sometimes.
Yes.
But she didn't have much mind. She'd come for a bit of a, have a bit of fun. She was excellent. And they,
bit of a cushion.
They would pull anybody's leg for them. Something on mercy. John Crabbe and Paul St. Mary, I don't know him.
His was a dialect.
Oh. No, I don't know him.
Yeah. But these were the classes in the harbour master's office.
I think I've heard May Watterson talking about him, but I don't... I think Naylish knew him, but I didn't.
Right, yeah.
That's my late wife.
So who ran the classes in the museum? Who did those?
That was once in the early days. Mm. Yeah, that was taken by Percy Kelly.
Oh yeah, you said that before.
Yes, right. Percy Kelly were taking those. Mm. And what they were good too. He would really get down to it, and he did the unforgivable sin of dragging Irish into it. You see, well, of course, it's just what some of us wanted to augment it, to say, how had these come things? You could see it plain as a pikestaff coming down, how things had happened. Well, Percy Kelly is on this, is he not?
No, he's not. Not. He's not.
Well,
on
Percy
this
Kelly
one.
Was a big friend of Dr. Douglas Hyde, the president of Ireland. They were very big friends, really good friends. And Dolan and Esther and Joan had been, there's only three of them, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. Anyway, they'd been at Aras an Uachtaráin, at the president's residence, staying there for the whole family did. They were very friendly. And of course, Dr. Hyde was a totally committed Irish speaker, learnt Irish, but he committed to speaker and worked tremendously hard at. But a total pacifist. He was an immovable pacifist, but he was respected on all sides, from the most extreme of the anti-pacifist to the extreme pacifist. He was respected all round. That's why he was so quickly made president of Ireland, because he was so popular with them. He did it, used to go around on his push bike all over the place. So that was how.
Okay.
How do we come now?
Now what about Charles Watterson? What about him?
Oh, Charles Watterson.
Is he one of the dialect?
Not Charlie the barber.
He was one of the dialect contributors, and you thought that maybe May would know him. May Watterson.
May, yes, May. Know of I'll him. Be seeing her tomorrow.
All right.
I could, if I get a copy of these
you can
ones,
have this.
You can have
yeah.
that one.
Oh, okay, you've got
yeah, that's, oh, that's I'll get,
because she will know quite a number of these too. Because she's over 90, I think, now, right. May. She won't admit it, but I think she is.
And what about this chap here?
Sansbury, I don't know this John Joseph Sansbury, but I knew a Sansbury that was in Southlands, and he was one of them, the Sansburys, and he knew had quite a few words of Manx, but
this man did the Russian funeral dirge in English.
Yes, that's, well, that's the same family.
Yes.
This is the same, this young fellow that I knew in Southlands, this would be his uncle, I think.
Yes.
I think so. I don't think it was his father. Mm. I think it was his uncle. But I couldn't be sure now at all.
Right.
But
they were from the south.
Yes. Oh, yes.
Okay. Right. Madge Watterson.
Madge Watterson was... Mrs. Watterson, the Lebel's daughter. Wasn't she?
I don't know.
I think so. I think she's Mrs.
She's the one that sang a lullaby in Manx that she learned from her mother.
Yeah.
According to the recordings.
Well, she would have got that from... Yeah. Yes. Well, that would be... Sure enough, she'd get that from her mother, Mrs. Watterson, the Lebel.
Yes.
And she was excellent. Madge's mother was an awful good sort, and she very nearly did for poor old, what the hang is his name, from the School of Scottish Studies that came in. He did a lot of work on the island, and I was in
not,
the room.
Not Sheila's brother.
Huh?
Eric?
No. This is a school. The man actually offered me a job at the, if I was ready to start at the very bottom with the School of Scottish Studies. But I was ready to start by nothing more than my food and.
One of these jobs.
I was to be found some rent or other. I wasn't to get any pay, but I was all ready for going, and mother and father both took bad at the very time, so that was it. No, I can't think of his name, is so well known, but it'll come in a minute. He was sitting in, but among a few other of us in, I think McGaw was in at the time too. At this session, and Mrs. Watterson was going on about things and my story, and Kenneth, Dr. Kenneth, oh dear, it'll come again. I've got Kenneth now. He was the head of the head charang in the School of Scottish Studies. Yeah. And he was sitting there quite taking this in. All right, yes, that was fine. Awful bad Scottish Gaelic and worse still Irish or something. Not really like that. And then all of a sudden, he sat up bolt upright, and he very near fell through the floor. Because Mrs. Watterson was talking about cleaning the chimney, and they'd have this rope going up, a chain rather, going up, and then with a piece of gauze on the end of it, up, that was the cleaning of the chimney. As Dirty said, Jekyll toast as fagin' an east. And Kenneth, very nearly fell out of his chair, because you see, the word east goes back to the 6th century, it's totally unused. In Irish or Scottish, virtually, well, in poetry, yes, but in ordinary use, it is just known as Gaelach, the brightness, which is a very good name for it. But he came out fagin an east, and of course, he knew immediately what it was. And he said, would you say that? Yeah, to just fagin an east. She said, what was it? She couldn't understand, the poor fellow gone out of his mind, which he had very nearly, with surprise. Because all this, the rest of it was ordinary ding-dong. Yeah. Suddenly this comes out.
It's a gem.
And what? Is that what you would know? What else would you call it? Only the moon? He said, the only other name I know for it is the moon. And he said, you ever hear Gaelach? No, she said, but it's a good name. And that's exactly what Johnny Neen said when we said to him, had you ever heard Gaelach? No, he said, but it's a very good name
that's
for
right,
it. So, but that was... of course, it's the Gaelach, the brightness by night. but that's Kenneth, oh, I'll get it. It's not Cowunda.
Or Brannan.
Maybe not.
So her mother was Mrs. Watterson from Colby Level.
Yes, that's her mother.
I think I've seen stuff from her in the folk life.
So. And she would have that from her mother.
Right. Yeah.
But I never knew she had it. But she wasn't.
Only a song.
Huh?
It was only a lullaby. That's all that's on it.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
She would get that from her mother, and she'd have it.
Was her mother a native speaker?
Oh yes.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. You don't know.
Don't choice,
you know her mother's
so,
maiden name.
She wasn't
name,
just a native speaker from from having to, so to speak, from having nothing else. It was she was a native speaker and from choice too.
Yeah.
First choice was always the mice. And I remember speaking to her once and said, it was a girl with us, and I said, how are you, Mrs. Watson? What is doing on you at all? He said, why couldn't you ask me? So I did, and of course the others didn't mind either, because they'd come to hear it. But
she enjoyed speaking, Max, and wanted you to talk to her.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And if I spoke to her in English, she'd think I'd gone out of my mind or something, you see. What was I thinking about?
Okay, the next, Mark Braid.
Mark Braid, very, very good hard worker and extremely competent, particularly with typing and everything like that. Mm-hmm. He did an awful lot of work in that way. And he kept it, and of course, Tom...
Bill wasn't technically minded at all, was he? He didn't like doing anything with the tape recorders if they
went
wrong.
Somebody who was practical. No, he didn't like anything to do with any machinery thing, whatever. But he came in with it, of course. He did, but he wouldn't touch them any more than I would.
That's right, yeah.
I couldn't fathom the things out at all. He would certainly speak into them. I didn't worry about the mic. He didn't like it. He didn't like the mic. Johnny Nunez has complete contempt. The mic meant nothing whatever to him. He just spoke into it.
He didn't give the slightest...
And he said, you say, Vala Forad, is it on the way? He used to pick a lot of English idioms like that and trounce them. He heard them, so he put them back into Manx, Vala Forad, is it on the way? As one of his favourite.
Yeah.
And of course that would come on the ribbon or whatever it was we had in some of the earliest days. It was a wire, but I never used that. They had a wire recorder early on, but that was only loaned. And then we had the sound mirror, and then various other things. Mm. And since then, I've had all sorts myself too.
I mean, it changes every year, the different machines you get.
Just behind you there, there's a whole load of stuff that I've got to edit yet, of stuff that I've picked up here, there and everywhere. Mm. And I have given them all of the recordings I've made of Robert Thompson, to put those into.
Right.
Into,
yes,
they're
I
all
in
Tyne Gilga.
Right.
That's the nearest thing
I
could do.
Oh, I see.
So that's there.
I'll ask Simone for them.
But there's quite a lot of those that Robert says himself he's forgotten what they were.
That's right.
But he's kind of threatened to go through them, but hasn't done yet. And sometimes you could hardly hear it because the mic was too far away. Mm. And Robert. Very, very great habit of being very confidential and drops his voice when he wants to stress something. He says, something that you particularly want to hear. He says, but that, and there you are, you've lost it. It was so, quite a number of people are like that, that if they want to be very sort of confidential and you don't know what to say.
What about John Cachan?
Ah, John Tom Cachan. I'm not here to describe the man, but very, very good for a good memory. And he had some excellent material that was practically gone. Excuse me here to.
Oh, I like
sorry,
a sweet.
This is collapsed.
Oh, sweet is lovely. Thank you.
My mouth is getting dry.
Yeah, yeah, sweet.
Oh, well, your tea's
getting cold.
The tea is meant to be. I want it cold.
We'll have a sweet break.
Yes.
Yeah, this is a sweet break.
You can't talk with one of these in your mouth.
I can't chew them either. Well, my spoons will fall out. The ones start to fall out already.
I've got a thing to put them in outside. So, that's fine. I'll do that. If I can still... John Tom Cachan. As I said, a wonderful, good memory. And very apt to do a little bit of his own... fun with the words too. One of the things that I like about is a farm up Soapy Glen, Killebrega. Mm-hmm. And you know this one. And he says, kill all on them ones that's telling lies. You mix languages up with one with, so kill the kill, And then Brege, they're telling lies, so kill a Brege. And he says, kill all them ones that's telling lies. That's what it means.
So a bit of a sense of humour. Yeah.
That's the sort of thing. But the other stuff was very good indeed.
He used to get very excited, didn't
oh,
he?
Oh, very.
Yes.
And of course he was...
Faster and faster.
But he said, I'm not blind, he said, because he'd be lighting his pipe and he can see the flame. So he was very close to being blind. Yeah. And I took him out by the hand one day as he wanted to see his damsels. And I said, what on earth is... I'd never heard of it called the damsels before. But I'll go out here and see the damsels. And I thought these were some...
dancing girls.
He was keeping quiet because he was a bachelor. Anyway, there was a tree and he couldn't see the damsons on the tree and they were damsels. That's first I've ever heard of that before. So I led him out to this. And then, and he'd feel the thing. Yeah, she said then he'd feel the thing for how they were. They're coming on, you say, but not a good crop. He couldn't see them, but he would feel by the so many as to where it'd be so many to the clump would be good. And he said, no, there's three or four short there, and he could tell roughly by that what it was like.
Was he the one that did he wear a pair of sunglasses? Was it him or was it another one? Somebody told me one of them used to just wear a pair of sunglasses or something all the time, and I wondered whether it was because he was going
blind. No, John Tong didn't. I don't think he wore glasses. I don't think so, because he wouldn't be able to see with them.
No.
But there's a very good thing. My nephew came with my brother and myself to see John Tong. I mean, it just the nephew was supposed to. Just to give him an insight to all the people and so on. And John Tom took his hand and he says, the boy of about six. I thought, well, how on earth, you know that? And Joan says, no, I'm not six yet. Oh, yes, I am. He said I was six on Wednesday. Last Wednesday. So he could say, how could he tell that? Or was it just
sizes,
a guess?
Yeah.
So I've been guessing, but it must have been feel, because that's all he had to go by. He couldn't see him properly. I don't think he could see him at all. Going by, yeah. But John Tom would come up with some outrageous things, but he'd have also some very, very good things. The thing that we hadn't heard very often was that John Tom was... if you sit down, gouda vi the fondach, take your food without stint. It literally means, the nearest translation you can get to fondach is without stint, I think.
Yes.
Is the nearest. That's what John Tom used to say himself.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But that's what he would translate it as.
Mm.
Take it without stint. So... his translation was good enough for me.
Absolutely.
So in the situation, but he an awful lot of things that John Tom had that I have got most of them noted down. But of course, they're only for with regard to the language mostly.
Mm. Was he a farm worker as well?
Well, farmer. Yes,
yeah.
Farmer himself. Yes,
yeah.
Of a farming family. And I don't know what relation. He was some relation to Mrs. Neil Barragarrett.
He was
know.
Some relation, but
don't
I
know,
don't
a cousin
know
or something. The mistress.
Mm.
And they were the two Barragarretts close together. So Neil Barragarrett and John Tom Carham Barragarrett.
But he had quite a large number of brothers and sisters.
Oh, yes.
As well.
But I didn't know any of them.
No.
I knew the two, John Tommy knew the two sisters.
All right.
The two sisters. John would be telling a yarn, and he was getting tied up in knots in the middle of it. And they'd be saying, no, that's not right. It was all in mice. And who and how on earth did he know? But they'd heard it so many times that they knew the thing off by heart, you see.
The sisters came and looked after the house for
the two sisters,
finished.
Yes.
Yes.
when he was...
I don't know how...
Not able to see his way around anymore.
That's right.
Mm.
While I was there, there was always the two sisters who were keeping an eye on him.
Mm.
And they'd be telling this, there's a big yarn going, and that's not right, it's so-and-so. Oh, yes, that's right. And he'd come back again, and then he'd get astray again. He'd be putting them right again. But he's an awful good sort. But and a voice like a thunder, because they had this little, the Irish and what's his name from California?
Carmody. Yeah.
Carmody. He had this little this thing on the finger, and the needle would just, for myself, well, I don't whisper. Needle would just move like this, but the trauma went right over the clock.
Yes.
Every time. The only person that they'd ever see, the Irish, we'd been all over Ireland, but we'd never come a voice like this. And they said that John would be talking in Ballygarrett, and they could hear him in Brown.
Really strong, powerful voice.
It came right down, right from underneath, and it fairly carried.
Fantastic.
Tremendous
voice.
Was
he a big man?
What?
Was he a tall man or not?
No, not really tall, no. I don't think. Mm. I can remember, I've never put a stick of inches on him, I don't know.
Mm.
No, I wouldn't say he was tall, but he wasn't small. No, about not much bigger than myself.
Middling.
So he wasn't tall.
Yeah.
He might have been a little bit taller than me, but not much. And I regard myself as small enough.
Who else have we got?
We're getting to now, the Charles Watterson, I don't know.
We don't know him. What about Lily?
Well, Lily Duggan, yes, but she was mostly drama. Right. And she was a first-class actress in anybody's language. She could learn parts quickly, and she could put them over in any old way you like to think of. Mainly comedy, but not entirely. She could be very serious too. She was a first-class actress. She didn't have a big lot of Manx, but she had lots of sayings and one thing and another, but she couldn't speak any Manx, I don't think, that I know of.
No, these were dialect extras.
Oh, she was very good at that.
So they would have taken her sort of drama.
She was excellent at that.
Yeah. And so who did she play for, Leslie?
She was a native dialect speaker.
Mm. What groups did she act with?
Huh?
What groups did she act with?
She was in about half a dozen different drama groups. And she'd be co-opted in. If they were stuck, they'd get Lily Duggan.
I see.
Somebody died, they get Lily Duggan in. And she would take any old part at any old time and enjoy it immensely and put her whole self into it. Mm. And extremely good to hear. And her and... Jimmy the worm. Not a worm, but a worm. the two, a first class, he was a first class actor too, in anybody's language. He could do anything, and he enjoyed doing it, but he would learn the parts and all that. The bigger up it was, if you were alongside of him, which I wasn't very often, but on an odd occasion I have appeared alongside of him, and you never knew what he could have done next. No, you'd have you waiting for your clue, but by crams it wouldn't come. And then he'd give you a sort of metaphorical nudge in the ribs from about 2 yards away, and you'd come in then. But they got to know him all right.
Yeah.
And he was a great character. They were just two of the... If you put those two together... You didn't need anybody else. Just stick the two on the stage and they do the whole lot. They take all the parts between them, if necessary. They were wonderful. They were really good. And they enjoyed every minute of it.
So did you actually, when the Folklore Commission came to the Isle of Man, when Kevin Danaher came here...
Oh, yes.
Did you go out with him to
yes.
the old people?
No, not so much. Not when he first came, no. I was tied to the cows' tails and the horses' tails, and I couldn't get away. No, but I did do a bit, but No, I didn't go right with them very much. Right. But I did a bit afterwards and so on, you know.
Right, right.
And then, of course, when I started with the museum, that's where I went, was with Kevin Danaher.
You went to Ireland,
yes,
didn't you?
I went with Kevin Danaher up to Donegal.
Right.
And I never had such a gruelling time. I was put through the paces, talking about... I wasn't allowed to sleep hardly. And then I had this pair, Kevin Danaher from the south, and Sean O'Hoghy from Donegal itself, the folklore collector there. A marvellous man in anybody's language or in any language. An absolute dedicated worker, day and night. And he'd have this push bike with the... not Edifone, what's the other fella? It's the same sort of thing, slung on the crossbar and winding him up in a business, and he'd go around. He got some wonderful records of people. And when Kevin Danaher came, he said, "What's this thing you've got?" You know, and but he knew. And could drag things out of people. Mm. And I heard things on that fortnight that I was, say, 11 days, because I was 3 days in Dublin. The 11 days with, I heard people like Neil O'Dowie of Gortoch, just outside Gortoch. I've never heard anybody that could talk into the machine, to the recording machine, for hours on end. And he stopped for a cup of tea, and we'd all have a cup of tea then. We were exhausted. He wasn't. he'd been a baker in Glasgow for donkey's years, you see. Mm-hmm. And that was to earn it, because they had no money, had nothing. So he went to Glasgow, and he'd be going there all the winter, and he'd come back for the summer for the crops and that, for the working. But Neil O'Dowie is a wonderful... And this is not in your list, but...
No, it's important as well, because it's all part of where it all began, really.
Yes. And I only wish that I'd been kept at it, and because being lazy of nature, I didn't go into it like I should have done. But I learnt an awful lot.
So you were there for 2 weeks, yes, sort of... learning and watching and listening and seeing how they did it.
Yeah.
And then you came back here and tried to set up a similar...
In that 3 weeks, I didn't hear as much English as we...
Speaking now.
Yeah. I had to struggle. And they were awfully good to help me out.
Yeah.
And they were always saying, they'd be passing the wire through into the inside of the van... for the recording where it was able to plug in, wasn't everywhere. Otherwise, they had batteries that they used. But if they could, if they're plugging in. And I know you say, Torgomsa, I have it. it is at me. For when it got to the end, if you say, this wire was coming through, and I was hearing that every time. And then I'd be hearing all these different people. And I heard a most beautiful girl singer of her. She'd be in her late teens with a glorious voice. I know nothing about music, but I know a glorious voice when I hear it. Because it seemed to me to be. And she was very popular throughout Ireland, but only unaccompanied. She never sang accompanied at all. And she didn't seem to have any... tune and fork or anything. She just sort of hummed slightly and then into it. He just did a little bit of a kind of a hum under her breath, sort of big, and away into it then. She was a beautiful singer, an awful nice girl. And the family were very proud of her, of course. There'd been others before her, that her forebears had been similar, and she'd learnt from them. And it purely traditional.
Yeah.
You'd know no musical training whatever at that time. Later she did, but at that time she did. Later, because she was an opera singer, later but I don't know with what, whether it was with an Italian opera company, I think she was. But I was very glad to hear that because I knew she was a lovely singer. But apparently she didn't quite come up to the supreme standards of it, which was good enough for us, I would consider. Mm.
So it was McGaw, wasn't it, at the museum at that time?
Yes.
And you came back from Ireland with all the ideas about what to do here?
No. I couldn't say it. Well, no, not at all. No. I came back with a lot of information. Mm. And that was steered. Mr. McGaw had a pretty good idea of what should be done. A very good idea of it, indeed. And he was a very easygoing person, I found. But that's as far as I'm concerned. He was extremely gentle with me, if you put it that way. He'd draw me out and put me down if necessary, but with a very gentle hand. I found a real gentleman, was what I found of him. We don't need this fella then.
No, we're fine. We've got enough power. Yeah. We've got batteries fine. Everything's okay.
What yeah. bit about Tom, maybe?
Tom Braid. Well?
Tom Braid.
Yes.
Because
yeah.
I don't know much about Tom.
Tom.
I met Mark.
Tom was Mark's Tom. Younger brother. Yeah. Tom started off that he didn't know or care anything whatever about Manx when I first knew him. Then all of a sudden, he came from, say 1 week, he wasn't in the least bit interested. The next week he couldn't stop him, and that's how he remained. Right up to the very last, even to inventing things like Balia Skrydaniar for Ish Grinstead. Balia Skrysa would be the grin part of it, and then Nya was the East Balia Skrydaniar. He was describing the traffic on the A35 or something going down to Bristol, where we were to go, my late wife and myself. And he said, Kratnyaganas Nuren Bats out of hell, which I know is not a Manx idiom, but it fitted in. It was coming like that. Not you. So Tom was one that came in later on in it when he was. Through Mark, I suppose.
Yeah. Seeing what his older brother was
I think
doing.
It would be a lot through. First, he was resisting. He didn't want to be bothered. Mm. No, he was too busy trying, because he got his business, profession, and that was going to take him all his time. But
so what did he do?
He was the water engineer.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And he was with the corporation, I think, or the water board, I don't know which. I think it was the corporation. But
they come from the Douglas area, then?
Hmm?
Did they come from the Douglas area?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And his father was a carpenter, I think you'd call it. Carpenter come joiner, I think he was both. And he went in for buying property. And he did very, very well at that. That's where they got their money. Tom's father bought a lot of property up in Ballinard Road.
Oh, yes.
You see, so it's a very, very, very...
Very select. Good, yeah. Yes.
So indirectly, Tom would and Mark would be doing well out of that. And then latterly, I suppose, Mark and his missus would be, they would be doing nicely. And Mark was a very careful sort of person too, and very competent.
What was Mark's profession?
He was a secretary to Percy Kelly in the
office.
Oh,
was he?
Oh, yes. Oh, that's it.
Yes.
Lawyer clerk, like him.
Yes.
He was. He ran the blinking place very near, with advice from Percy. Almost. Mark did the spade work of the whole place, and he was a very, very competent typist. But he used to say it's much easier to type in Manx than English, and he was an expert. He got both, he made it with both, but he didn't like the trying to find the accents on the of her Irish.
It's still not easy. No.
But the word processor is a lot better for accents than the blinking old computer. Right.
Yeah.
Much easier. You could get all your acute accents easily on the computer, but the grave and the circumflex, you got to go through your numerical. You got to, I don't know what you've got to do with all the directly. Numbers in creation before you get them.
You get the right thing.
You get Alt, the alternative thing, Alt and the numbers, and you get them all right, but I would always get the wrong blithering number and they keep a big peep out of it.
Doesn't like it.
I lost 36 pages on that thing, and I don't know yet how I did it. They just disappeared.
Oh, no. There's nothing more annoying, is
this, there? The last six that I lost, they found out that I had dialed Control and A, and whop, out they all go.
Mm.
So... the control is the dangerous one.
It is.
I think,
isn't it?
That the alt is not quite so bad.
Yeah.
The alternative thing. Yeah. And a keyboard too, I suppose, on the type, on the electric type.
Because I've never used one of those before. I don't know.
Well,
haven't you? This fella is nice, but as long as you don't have me behind them, anybody else would be all right. But I will say one thing. You make a type and error with that, it'll tell you. It'll give an awful beep out of it.
Mm.
And occasionally you'll get the letter you type instead of the thing you wanted. But often enough, you type a control and an N, you'll just get a bloop. It's a good loud one too. You can tone it down, I think, but it's fit to blow your eardrums out. But no, I'm hopeless at that. Really getting at 89 is an early time to start. Yeah. A bit late for me to start learning.
You're doing well.
Yeah.
Can you think of anything?
Now then,
I think we've been through Tom.
Any rate, was very enthusiastic latterly, and did a lot of work. And then, of course, when he went away, he got out of touch a bit, but he still kept it up.
Yeah.
Where did he go? When did he leave the island?
I couldn't give you the dates, but...
In the 50s or the 60s?
50, that's only somebody shouting for help.
Oh, yes.
50... I don't know.
Mm.
Between 50 and 60.
Yes.
Because, yes, of course, because we were married in 64 and Tom was already in Bristol living then.
Right.
He went to East Grinstead first, then he got a job at Bristol and the water authority there. And unfortunately, Tom had cancer and we lost him. He was a very good sort, very good friend of ours.
So he never came back to the island?
No. And I do keep in touch with his widow. And of course I keep in touch with Mrs. Collister here, who's his Tom's sister. Tom Braid's sister is here.
Is
Tom
she?
And Mark Braid's sister is Mrs. Collister here. And they've always got a...
Well, living in the home as well.
Yes, I see her every day.
Yeah.
And we have. And her daughter comes and we've got to talk about them too.
So what's her name, her first name?
Leah.
I'm sorry to be old.
Leah.
Leah Collister. Right. Yeah.
My Mrs. Collister. Right, yes, I've heard them, particularly the women folk, that was all Leah, of course, then. That's me. My sister was here too, and she used to call her Leah too.
That's right. Yes, I knew your sister was here as well. That's right.
Nice name.
Yes.
Yes.
Right, I'm going to stop my.